The following program is sponsored by Friends of Life Outreach International. After being falsely accused of terrorism while starting churches in Turkey, Andrew Brunson shares his story.
I didn't feel good. I was under the 3 life sentences. I thought I wouldn't see my children again. I'd be separated from Noreen for the rest of my life and die in a Turkish prison. So I didn't feel good, but I was saying, oh God, I need to worship. And it's that worship and submission in that hardship that is so precious to God. Mm-hmm.
Sheila Walton, I'm here with Randy Robertson, and I am so excited. I'm excited for you about this particular show. I, like thousands and thousands and thousands of people around the world, when they heard the name Andrew Brunson, dropped to our knees and began to plead that God would bring this man and his wife home, held in a Turkish prison for over 2 years. I never thought we would have the privilege of having him here in the studio. So please help me welcome Andrew and Noreen Brunson.
I've been excited for weeks. I know you have too. Both of us read his book, God's Hostage, and I know both of us, we couldn't put it down. And it, in a lot of ways, was not what I expected. It's very honest. It's very raw. It's very human. So glad to have you guys here. How are you doing now, a year plus after being released?
Being free is wonderful. Being back with my wife, with my children. It was the small things that I really missed, you know, sitting down on a bench outside with Noreen or having breakfast together, going out for coffee, and just being able to do those small, normal things. So wonderful.
One of the things that was really clear from your book is that so often we hear God say something and we think we know the timing, and sometimes the timing is completely different, because you begin the story by waking up and feeling like God was saying something to you. What was that, and what did you think it meant?
It really surprised me. He said, it's time to come home. And at first, I didn't know that it was God. I thought, I'm already home. I'm in Turkey. We'd lived there for 23 years at that time, and we expected to stay there the rest of our lives. So I thought, I'm home. What does this mean? Then I thought, maybe it means he's taking me home to heaven. And my assignment has been stopped, this assignment to prepare for harvest in Turkey. And then it became, we were arrested and to be deported. And then I held on to it as God was telling me ahead of time so that I would know he's in this. So I'm thinking, after 23 years, you're going to let them deport us? But there's so many good things happening. But when God said it's time to come home, then I knew he was in it. Mm-hmm. And then it became a promise that I held on to for 2 years. God, you said you'd take me home. Are you going to do it? Mm-hmm. Please do it. You said you would.
Noreen, I wanted to ask you, because for the first, I think it was maybe 12, 13 days, you were both arrested and held. Mm-hmm. And then they released you. Mm-hmm. What was that like for you as a wife, walking into freedom but leaving your husband behind?
It was one of the hardest things of my life. Yeah, I called my daughter right after that and I said, I feel like I've done one of the hardest things I've done. You know, on one hand, I have to leave. I don't have an option. I didn't want to leave him behind, but I don't have an option to stay. And it was really better for me to be out, to be making all kinds of efforts and seeing what's going on, what can be done for him. But it was very hard, because just the night before, he had shared with me how that was his fear, was that we would be separated.
Wow.
And we were afraid of, while we were being held, we were afraid of being separated and then, you know, disappearing into the system. We wouldn't know where the other one is. And so we just wanted to stay together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she actually argued with him, said, I want to stay with my husband. I thought, that really stayed with me. It really touched my heart. That she would argue to stay in prison with me. So,
when we pick up these kinds of books, because you know there have been several great books about people who were held hostage for their faith in these missionary countries, we usually think, okay, I'm gonna hear about someone who's got an amazing level of faith, who trusted God through everything, who endured through all these trials with a song on their lips and a smile on their face. It's not your story. And you're very honest about it.
Well, that's what I expected, too. I read those stories, too, and I thought, well, I'm going to have a sense of strength, of joy, and certainly just a feeling of grace, a special grace because I'm going through something very difficult,
right.
And I'm suffering for Jesus. And when that didn't happen, especially the sense of presence, because I'd run after presence for years and sense God's presence in a number of ways, and then it was like it stopped. And this really, it really shocked me.
Did you feel as if God had forsaken you?
I did.
Wow.
I thought that He had turned me over and abandoned me. It wasn't true, but that's what I was dealing with. Those were my doubts and my questions.
When did you realize what you were actually being held for, that you weren't about to be sent back to the States, but all these trumped-up charges?
Well, we never knew really why I was being held because I kept changing the reasons. Mm. So it ranged from terror to being a spy to helping to plan an attempted coup, all kinds of charges. And they kept changing them. And behind it all, they knew that it wasn't true. There were other reasons. I think the reason they initially held me after they released her was to intimidate other missionaries and have them self-deport or to intimidate local Christians. And then they just held me to gain leverage from the United States.
Yeah.
But behind it all, there was a spiritual story going on as well.
By the time we'd been held there together, 12, 13 days, you know, something was clearly wrong.
You knew something was off. I think that's one of the things he said you said. Something's off. Something's not quite right here. I'm curious, as time goes on, and Andrew's feeling like God's left him, how did you feel while you were outside trying to work to get him out?
I mean, it was hard. All my thoughts were for him. All my efforts were for him. He was my priority. He became the priority definitely during that time. Whatever I could do on the diplomatic side, trying to get prayer, keeping prayer going, mm-hmm. How can I encourage him? Digging up the prophetic words and saying, Lord, what are you saying here?
Lord,
what are you saying to us?
Did you feel like you were hearing from God on a regular basis? Or did you feel a sense of detachment like he did?
No, I didn't feel a sense of detachment. No, I didn't. I didn't. I didn't understand the timing, as you said. The timing is a big thing. I really spent a lot of time just claiming these words, mm-hmm. hoping they were from God, but claiming them and standing on them. I had to lean into God. I knew that I couldn't do this on my own. Hmm. So I think that in a way that's just a grace when if you have that realization you can't do it on yourself because it means you're going to be really looking to the Lord.
What she would say is that there are things that God has planned for you outside of prison. You have to be outside to make them happen. Mm-hmm. So there are all these words, but I don't know when they'll be fulfilled.
Yeah.
And it could be 15 or 20 years down the road, and I didn't know that I could hang on for that long. Mm.
You paint a very poignant picture in the book, though, of the days you would just show up, and even days when they wouldn't let you into the prison, you would stand someplace where Andrew could see you, or your car would be parked someplace where he knew. And there was something about that I found profoundly touching, your total commitment to your husband for as long as it took. Did you have friends? I mean, obviously, you've been planting a church there for years. Did you have many Christians gathering around you?
Sure. Absolutely. And the prayer was starting increasingly. So, yeah, I was not alone. By the way, the only place he could see me was from the detention center. Once he got to actual prison, he was completely cut off. So that was just really difficult.
Concrete and razor wire. So, yes, I couldn't see her then.
So we could get into the politics of it all, internal or with the U.S. and Turkey. But you also talk about something bigger that was going on. That's a spiritual battle. Tell me a little bit about what you think happened and is continuing to happen spiritually.
So I think that there were two stories, and one is what was in the media with all the political intrigue, the religious persecution, the propaganda campaign the Turkish government had against me, saying I was the dark priest, the spy priest, agent priest, CIA agent, all these things. So there was all of that political intrigue, but then behind it, it's what I call the God story. Mm. And this is that God was taking what Satan intended to harm me, and he was turning it around. So in 2009, God had spoken to me and said, prepare for harvest. And after that, everything we did was focused. How do we prepare for a powerful move of God? And what's the largest unevangelized country in the world, which is Turkey. Wow. Most Turks have never met a Christian. Most cities don't have a church. So in 2016, when they were going to deport us, they arrested us for deportation, I thought, God, have you canceled this assignment? We're supposed to prepare for harvest. Did I do something wrong, or what happened? And then as the imprisonment dragged on, we began to hear of so many people praying around the world in huge numbers with great intensity for the entire time I was in prison and in a number of countries. And we began to see, wait, God is doing something amazing. Mm-hmm. I'm sitting in a Turkish prison cell, weak and broken and just trying to hang on. And he's doing something powerful and raising up millions of people around the world to pour prayer into Turkey. So I came to see that my imprisonment was actually part of my assignment to prepare for harvest. Mm. Wow.
And so what we'd like to tell people is to, and by the way, we want to thank all the listeners who yes. prayed. We're just so grateful. We wish we could tell everyone face to face. But what I would like to say to people is keep an eye on Turkey now. Watch what's going to happen, because I believe these prayers, they were for much more than his release, and they're just for the spiritual release of so many people. So I believe we're going to see that.
By the way, this was also very scary also.
Yes.
Because I came to see I'm of much more use to God in prison than out. He might keep me here.
For a season.
Yes.
But it's interesting though, Andrew, because you, as Randy said, you're very transparent, very honest, which I found really helpful and easy to relate to. But you do show the way that it's almost like you're going in circles, but each time your faith is going a little deeper and a little deeper. I mean, when you look back, I was wondering, what was your hardest moment and what was your most glorious moment?
Well, I had a number of hard moments, and yeah. what happened is I would get knocked down, and then I would begin to battle toward a point of submitting my will to God, of saying, I don't like what's happening, but I want to leave my life in your hands. And if you want me to be in prison for a time, then I want to accept this and just submit myself to you. And I'd finally get to that point, and then I'd be knocked down again to something harder. I'd fall deeper, and then I'd start to crawl back to that point. So it was like a roller coaster. One of the worst times, after I'd been in prison for about 11 months, I was called into a court session, and they increased the charges against me so that I had an automatic 3 life sentences in solitary confinement with no parole. And this just felt like a death sentence to me. And I'd been trying to focus myself on God now for several months and fighting for my faith, for my relationship with God, and this just knocked me down. But then within a couple of weeks from that, I wrote a song that I sang it every day in prison after that. Mm-hmm. And one of the verses says, I want to be found worthy to stand before you on that day with no regrets from cowardice, things left undone. And this became my prayer, my daily prayer, thinking I'm going to stand before Jesus someday. And I don't want to have regrets that Jesus says to me, I had assignments for you. I had an inheritance for you to win, victories for you to win. And you didn't because of cowardice. And so then I started to fight every day to say, oh God, I don't want to be in prison. But if this is an assignment for me, then give me the strength to endure, to persevere in it. And it became my daily battle.
Do you know how many people knew about that song? I mean, I don't know if you realized it was posted.
I don't know.
Yeah, it was posted on social media. And it was, I mean, the words were phenomenal. Mm-hmm. It touched so many of our lives.
So let me say, this was a heart song, and I was singing it surrounded by concrete and razor wire under 3 life sentences. Mm. So people would write to me sometimes and say, be like Paul and Silas, you know, because they sang when they were in the Philippian jail. And I'd think, well, they were only there for one night. No, but I would also think, we don't know how they were singing.
That's true.
Were they just full of happiness? Or were they giving the sacrifice of praise?
Yeah.
And so for me, I didn't feel good. I was under the 3 life sentences. I thought I wouldn't see my children again. I'd be separated from Noreen for the rest of my life and die in a Turkish prison. So I didn't feel good. Mm-hmm. But I was saying, oh God, I need to worship. And it's that worship and submission in that hardship that is so precious to God.
You got some advice, and I marked this because I thought, wow, that's really good, because it is easy, I think, for Christians to encourage each other in slightly cliche or not realistic ways. And you said this is the best advice you got. Just breathe. Keep your eyes on God. That's all. No other expectations. Just breathe and you will come through. I think a lot of people need to hear that. They don't even have to be in a Turkish prison to need that encouragement. How much did that idea of just cling and get through, get you through?
It helped me a lot because other people were saying, and I understand why they're saying it, preach, you know, just preach the gospel or sing like Paul and Silas, or worship your way out.
And I was actually, he did all those things.
I did.
Actually, he shared his faith, and actually, he sang every day. Yeah. And actually, there were many, many victories. And in court, he forgives, and he shares the gospel. So there were many, but go ahead.
She's your number one supporter.
Yes.
But I felt like I'm just barely hanging on. Mm. You know, I'm fighting just to survive and cling to my relationship with God. I don't feel like going on and singing. And, you know, for the first months, I tried to sing Great Is Thy Faithfulness, and I would choke up. Mm-hmm. I would just have too many questions and doubts. But this just kind of relieved me of this burden of having to live up to all the heroic people I'd read about and just focus on, just breathe and look at God. Just keep my eyes on Him, and as long as I do that, and just wait for Him.
How has your perception of God changed, or has it? In the last 3 years?
Yeah. Every means that I use to develop and cultivate intimacy with God, and this is what I was focused on for years, every one of them was severely tested.
Wow.
But in the end, I came out stronger in my relationship. And I said I experienced the silence of God for 2 years. I had no sense of His presence, which was very, very difficult for me. I thought, okay, I'm being persecuted. I understand persecution. I don't like it, but where are you in my darkest time? So, but I came out of it. And what surprises me, I felt that lack of intimacy, like I was in a desert. Where are you, God? And why your silence? Where is your presence? And yet, after 2 years, I came out with a deeper intimacy. And I think it came from this, that my love for God can be completely sincere and real, but until it's tested, it's not proven. Mm-hmm. It's real and sincere, but it's not proven. And I came out of this thinking, okay, my love for God has been tested now. And I showed Him that I love Him. Mm-hmm. And He showed me. Mm-hmm. He let me see what's really in my heart, that in my heart I am devoted to Him. Mm-hmm. I do love Him, and I was faithful to Him. And this gave me this tested love, tested faithfulness that gives me a different sense of confidence with Him.
I was going to say confidence. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is the word that
it's a different sense of confidence in my relationship with Him.
What about you?
I would say the same thing, but it came about in a roundabout way because, again, I had different expectations even for the days that I was held. I mean, it wasn't panic, definitely. There was a amount of peace, but not as much as I would have expected or hoped for. Mm-hmm. And I was surprised. So what Andrew talks about is unfelt grace. For example, in the court, when he's testifying in front of it, I could see God's grace on him so clearly, but he didn't feel any of it. I could see the result, though. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I guess it was... There are things about God that I knew wrongly, basically.
Yeah.
One of my prayers is, and before this and during this, is, Lord, let me know you as you are, as you really are, not as I, you know, imagine, but let me know you as you are.
Wow.
Yeah, I think you maybe even more than you realize that your life has demonstrated the gospel, even when you didn't necessarily feel it. It was there, and you've shown it to all of us. I just want to say thank you for that. And Sheila, there's something I want our viewers to see, where we have another opportunity to demonstrate the gospel, the truth, the grace, and the love of Christ through something very important. Would you take a minute to watch this?
Nothing draws nature and mankind together as swiftly or as contentiously as a water source in a barren wilderness, all clamoring to have their most basic needs met. Every living creature in the area shares the water source for this village. Its banks are ground zero for all of the drinking and bathing and waste. And although they avoid the river during the most dangerous hours, this is not the first time the village has experienced such a tragedy. They can't escape the water's danger, either meeting it at the river or taking it home in buckets laced with bacteria that threatens every life. But what choice do they have? Ida has no options. Nothing she can do to ensure the safety of her family. Her hands are tied, but ours are not. There is a way to rescue Ida and her family, and we can do it together.
I will never forget that morning when I walked with Ida from her village all the way to the only water source, which is that river, and it was quite low while we were there a few weeks ago. And when I asked her about her family, and she told me this devastating story of her daughter being taken by a crocodile. And I can't even, I mean, as a mother, I didn't even know how to wrap my head around that kind of pain. And the thing that, I mean, that trip has impacted me forever. I will never forget these women or the way that you and I can do so much with so little to help them. All they want is clean water. I mean, when I walked with them to some of the other moms to other villages, the well was just like 6 feet deep. They dug it themselves, and there's snakes in it, and the water's filthy. And mothers have lost their children falling in or dying from drinking the water. And Ida, there's nothing she can do. She gets up at 4:30 every morning to walk to the river because she doesn't want her other children to go. There's nothing else she can do. But what I was able to tell her and want to share with you, there's so much you and I can do. We can put a well in her village, and it takes so little. This is doable, Randy.
Absolutely.
If we all do our bit, we can change Ida's world and the world of so many.
Yeah, and we've drilled thousands of wells around the world. The average cost for one well is $4,800. That's an average across all the ones we do. If you have that gift and that desire in your heart to bless so many people with fresh, clean drinking water, I just ask you to go online or pick up the phone and do it right now. We can also do a lot together, every one of us. $48 will provide water for virtually a lifetime for 10 people, $144 for 30 people. There's so much you can do, and there's so much we can do when we come together and all just do something. So I ask again, go online, go to the phone, make the best gift you can, and know that we are making a real difference in the lives of these people that will appreciate the love that you demonstrate so much. And I want to mention, because I know Sheila won't do it, but with any gift, if you'll request this book right here, Praying Women, it'll bless you. It'll bless others in your life. So we want to bless you as you bless others. So give the best gift you can. It's going to work. I think we can do this.
Yeah, it makes a huge difference. Huge difference. As long as the body of Christ is on this planet, we need to be doing something in Jesus' name. So please call now.
Today, a mother living in extreme poverty will do the unthinkable. Give her children dirty, disease-filled water that she knows could kill them. With no other choice, what's a mother to do? With your help, clean water is on the way. Mission Water for Life is the answer to a mother's prayer to save the lives of her children, to offer them a bright future free from the fear of death. With your gift today, you can help drill and establish 350 water wells this year. Your gift of $24 will help provide clean water for 5 children. A gift of $48 will help provide for 10. $72 will provide for 15. And $144 will help provide life-giving water for 30 people for a lifetime. With your gift, we'll send you Praying Women, How to Pray When You Don't Know What to Say. In her new book, Sheila Wall shows you how to reignite your conversation with God to become a strong praying woman. With your gift of $100 or more, please request the Power of Prayer Bundle. This bundle includes a cozy throw blanket adorned with words of the Lord's Prayer, a decorative pillow cover, as well as Sheila's book. All three are encouraging reminders of how there's power in your faith-filled prayers. Finally, please consider a gift of $1,200 to help provide water for 250 people, or a gift of $4,800 to help sponsor a complete well. And you may request our brand new commemorative bronze sculpture, A Mother's Strength. Please call, write, or make your gift online.
Thank you so much. If the lines are busy, keep calling. And for any gift at all, you can request Andrew's book, God's Hostage.
It's a great book. Oh my goodness, so good. Sheila. So good. I just want to thank you guys for being here, for opening up. Would you thank Andrew and Noreen Brunson for being here? I appreciate everything you guys have done for the body of Christ and look forward to the great things God has in store for you and for you. Join us again every day.
Keep praying for Turkey. Don't forget, keep praying for Turkey.
That's right.
That God's Spirit will break out and they'll begin to see the miracles that God's already promised them.
See you next time on Life Today.
If you are in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, come be a part of the Life Today studio audience. Go to lifetoday.org/tickets. lifetoday.org/tickets.
And you never have to think, well, was that prayer okay? It's in the Bible.
Yeah.
It's a good chance. It's good to hear that.
Praying when you don't know what to say. Next week. Life Today is made possible by the supporters of Life Outreach International. Your gift will be used exclusively for the exempt purposes of Life. The ministry features specific outreaches as examples of the programs it supports and conducts. Gifts are considered to be without restriction as to use unless explicitly stipulated by the donor. The ministry is a member of the ECFA.